Well, I bring greetings to you again this evening. Good to be back here with you. So wondering as we think of to think of revival again this evening, our mind can go many different directions. But tonight we'd like to talk about church life. Are you halting in church life, like your brother was talking about? Are you limping through church life, or is it going well for you? You can turn with me to Hebrews chapter 10. The title of our sermon this evening is one phrase from this chapter. It says, "Let us consider one another." Let us consider one another. God instituted the church. He gave us this tremendous blessing when He created the church. And He made each one of us a part of it. And we contribute something, or we should contribute something if we aren't or if we don't. And I believe you are. But sometimes we need some reminders about how to do church life. I'm going to zero in on verse 24. It says, "And let us consider one another to provoke unto love and good works." And we're not planning to talk this evening about love and good works necessarily. We're just going to consider that one phrase, consider one another. So we're not planning to talk about the love and good works, but you'll see that that's all intertwined. That's all intertwined with considering one another. So what is Paul talking about here when he says we should consider one another? What is he talking about? Well, that word consider means to be careful not to cause inconvenience or hurt to others. So it's a building up. It's an encouraging. Think of the church congregation here as a team. Now, I don't know. I used to enjoy softball. I don't so much anymore, but I used to love to play softball. Whatever your sport is that you like, you have a team, don't you? You've got to have a team if you want to play softball. And what do you do? What do you do if you want to win that game of softball? Do you go around just tearing down your teammates, like, "You can't do this. You can't hit that ball. You can't catch that ball. You're a loser." What would happen to your ball game if you did that? Well, you would lose, wouldn't you? But no, instead we say, "You can do this. You can do this. Good hit, good catch." We encourage, we exhort, we yeah, it, I like to think of the church like that tonight. We're not a softball team, but we are a team. Paul was talking about brotherhood. That's what church life is about, isn't it? Church life is about brotherhood. And we are to do good to others. Galatians 6:10, he says, "As ye have therefore opportunity, let us do good unto all men." That's the building up, the encouraging, not the tearing down. Then he says, "Especially unto them who are of the household of faith." I'd like to read a number of verses here just to get the context of this. So if you're in Hebrews chapter 10, verse 19, let's start at verse 19. It says, "Having therefore, brethren, boldness to enter into the holiest by the blood of Jesus, by a new and living way, which he hath consecrated for us through the veil, that is to say, his flesh. And having an high priest over the house of God, let us draw near with a true heart, in full assurance of faith, having our hearts sprinkled from an evil conscience, and our bodies washed with pure water. Let us hold fast the profession of our faith without wavering, for he is faithful that promise. And let us consider one another to provoke unto love and to good works, not forsaking the assembling of yourselves together, of ourselves together, as the manner of some is, but exhorting one another, and so much the more as ye see the day approaching." I'm going to stop reading there. There's just a lot of things we could take numerous sermons out of these verses. Verse 22, let us draw near. That's an important part of good church life. Let us hold fast. We have all, every one of you who has come and joined this church has agreed to do what this church does. We hold fast to the scriptures. We hold fast to what we agreed to do. Then he says we should consider one another. And this considering one another is really, it's relationships. relationships, and church life. And you know that relationships can be wonderful, but they can be very complicated sometimes, can't they? Relationships can be very complicated. They take a lot of effort, they take a lot of investment, and they can break down very easily. We can spend a lot of time investing into a relationship, building that relationship. And with a few thoughtless, careless words and actions, destroy that relationship very quickly. And we said last night that Satan plays for keeps. Well, Satan knows about church relationships. And Satan knows that if he can drive a wedge between any one of you, brother or sister, he can get something started that can fester and grow into something huge. He takes an opportunity wherever he can to drive that wedge, to pit one against another, to encourage you to assume that something your brother or sister said or did was malicious, however that might look. He does that. He pits one against another. And we start forming sides. And before we know it, we're like a bunch of chickens in the chicken yard. We have some chickens back home and have had over the years. And you know what happens when a chicken hurts itself or gets this? The flock of chickens starts to pick on one of them, and after a while they're drawing blood and everybody's picking at him, and after a while the chicken's dead. Satan would love to have us as Christians operate that way in church life. Pick on that chicken until it's dead. We are to consider one another. There are about 50 times, I believe, in the New Testament, if I counted right, this one anothering is mentioned, and we will only look at a few of them tonight. But I'd like to pick up a few in our text here and then pull some others from other places in the scripture. But these things are, I believe, important if we want to get church life right. They provide the skeletal system for church life, if you please. It's kind of like a body. You know, every one of you that's here tonight has a skeletal system. You have bones, you have muscles. But without those bones and those muscles, you wouldn't be much, would you? You couldn't come in the door. You couldn't do anything. Just as our muscles and bones give shape to our body, I believe this one anothering can be the skeletal system of church life. Gives form and shape to the brotherhood. Take away that skeleton and what do you have? It's a useless pile of muscle and tissue, and the body will die. So a number of one anothers that we have here in the Bible. The first one we'd like to consider, and each one of these we're just going to consider very briefly. I believe I have 9 of them, I think. But the first one here is in our text. Let us consider one another. From verse 24. I believe Paul, just his plea here is that we would have a mutual and watchful regard for one another. You know, if I am your brother, I have got your back. You can count on me. We feel for each other. Romans 12:15 says, rejoice with them that do rejoice and weep with them that weep. You know, we are touched by our brothers and our sisters' infirmities, their misfortunes. We're a body. When they hurt, I hurt. We consider one another. We are considerate. This involves getting right down in the trenches with a brother or sister. And when we do that, you know, some situations get ugly. We get muddy. We get dirty. Are you willing to do that for your brothers and your sisters? Are you willing to consider one another? Or is all I can think about is considering me? That won't build good church life, will it? We need to consider one another. We need to exhort one another. We also find that here in our text. And that word exhort means to strongly encourage. You know, just like I was talking about with the softball team, you know, we encourage each other. There's something that that does for you, a word of encouragement. We've all received it. As I was leaving our church back home to come up here, it was people stepped up and said, they gave us words of encouragement. Me, my wife, and you know, they did these nice little things for us that just made us feel like they cared. And I hope people are doing that for you. You know, it blesses you in church life. So sometimes we're the receiver, and sometimes we're the giver. You know, we all like to receive those things. We all like those nice little things to be done for us. But remember, when that happens to you, remember how you felt, and do that in return for someone else. Bless someone else. We are to strongly encourage one another. Hebrews 3:13 says, but exhort one another daily while it is called today, lest any of you be hardened to the deceitfulness of sin. So see here that if we choose not to exhort one another, there's consequences for that. He says we need to encourage or exhort one another so that we are not hardened by the deceitfulness of sin. There is value in exhorting. We need to exhort each other to be faithful. We're all in danger of cooling off and losing the faith. We talked about our heart last night, how that thing can be turned away from God. It can follow other things besides what it's supposed to follow. We can be turned away. You know, we need our brothers. We need our brothers to encourage us, to consider us, and to exhort us. Sometimes people get this idea that they don't need the church. They're good enough on their own, just me and God. We do all right. You know, we need the brotherhood. There's a story I heard a while ago. I don't know if it's true, but it makes a point. So there was a man that got kind of disenchanted with his church, and he quit going to church. And he was bitter at the church, and the pastor came to visit him one day. This was on the frontier, I guess, and he was sitting in there in front of his hearth, had the nice fire going on the hearth, and the preacher rides up there and goes into the cabin, and of course, you know what? You know how you feel. You're kind of on the outs of the church, and the preacher comes. You know, you don't really want to talk to him, maybe. The preacher goes into his cabin. He sits down in the chair. He doesn't say a word. They just both sit there watching the fire. This thing's glowing, full of bright, shimmering embers. He sat there for a while, and the pastor gets up. He goes, and he takes the tongs off the hearth, and he gets one of those glimmering, shining coals, and he puts them in the far corner of the hearth. He sits back down in his chair. Of course, you know where all the eyes are. It's on that coal. What do you think happened to that coal? We all know what happened to that coal, right? It began to die until it was a piece of gray ash or a cold coal instead of a live coal. They watch this happen. The pastor gets up. He goes over and he gets the coal and he puts it right back where he had gotten it. And in a few minutes, that coal is glowing like it was before. Then he gets up to leave. And this man who was bitter at the church says, thank you for that great sermon. And the pastor left. I don't know if that's a true story, but it makes a point I'd like to leave with you this morning, this evening. You know what? I need the church. I am like that coal. If I choose to distance myself from the church, I will die. I believe there's times and places where people can survive when they are deprived or not able to be a part of a church. But we need the brotherhood to help us to remain faithful. And when we choose to isolate ourselves from the church community, people are doing it. We do so at great risk to our spiritual lives, to our spiritual well-being. It's about me and God, but it's about more than that. It's about me and God and the brotherhood. We need to consider one another. We need to exhort one another. And the third one I have is that we need to love one another. These things are very basic. You've heard all these things before, but I think they're important. They're important enough for us to consider. We need to love one another. 1 John 4:7 says, "Beloved, let us love one another, for love is of God, and everyone that loveth is born of God and knoweth God." Our love of God's children, God's people, God's saints, those people that sit beside us on the pew in our church. Our love for them is proof of our love for God himself. 1 John 5:2 says, "By this we know that we love the children of God, when we love God and keep his commandments." Can you love God and not your brother? Well, this a lack of love in the church produces some very negative things. The lack of love produces strife, conflict. It's not conducive to bringing in, you know, other people who are not part of the church. And things start to happen that are bad. Things, we start to be like the chickens in the chicken yard, you know, when that love fades. Also, we can see is a negative in our brother or sister. When that starts to happen, all of our energy then needs to be consumed with just fixing the problems that develop right inside of these walls. And there's no energy left to go out and be the salt to the earth and the light to the world. Besides, why would we do that? We don't have anything to offer anyways if we can't get along with each other in here, do we? I think that's the key. We need to have, our love for God needs to be on fire. If it's not, we can't love our brother. And things will go downhill from there. I know there are times when church life does not go as smoothly as others. I've had my share of experiences with things like that where church life was very difficult. What do we do with times like that when we face those challenges? We are to abound in love toward each other. As a brotherhood, we are to abound in love, not just to tolerate each other. There's a big difference. Love is essential. 1 Corinthians 13:13 says, "And now abide faith, hope, charity, these three." But you remember what the rest of the verse says? The greatest of these is love. The greatest of these is charity. Paul says here, love is greater than faith. That's what he says in that verse. Love is greater than faith. And the Bible says that without faith, we cannot please God, doesn't it? That's what the Bible says. So if love is even greater than faith, if it says without faith, we cannot please God, then for sure without love, we can't please God. And yet, I think you can identify with me in this. And yet there's times, we know all that, and yet there's times we struggle to love a brother or a sister. Hopefully you know nothing about that. You don't know what I'm talking about. I think you probably do. But without love, it is impossible to please God. So are you loving the brotherhood? Do you understand the value they bring to your life? Number four is we need to be teaching and admonishing one another. And those things kind of go together. Probably focus more on the admonishing on this point. But Colossians 3:16 says, "Let the word of Christ dwell in you richly in all wisdom, teaching and admonishing one another in psalms and hymns and spiritual songs, singing with grace in your hearts to the Lord." Now, we have a lot of teaching in our churches. You get up, you come here every Sunday morning, and somebody is teaching. Whether it's a Sunday school class, whether it's the sermon, people are teaching. We're learning. We're constantly learning. We're okay with that. We love to be taught. The admonishing can have maybe a little bit of a different angle that I'd like to think about. You know, we all know that, as I said earlier, that church life is not all roses, especially when we lose that love we were talking about. And then people get hurt, and then hurt people hurt more people. That's just kind of how it works. And that's why Jesus knew all these things were going to happen. Jesus knew that we weren't always going to have rosy church life. And so he knew that. So he gave us some instruction in Matthew 18. We're not going to turn there. You know those verses. But he says, when there are things that come up between you and a brother, he gives us instructions on how to take care of that. There's a process that needs to be followed. And if that process in Matthew 18 isn't followed, relationships that we want to build and maintain begin to break down very quickly. Jesus says, when something happens between you and your brother, you are supposed to do what? You are supposed to go and talk to them, right? He doesn't say you're supposed to run to the ministry team. He doesn't say you're supposed to run to the bishop and complain about what happened, how this brother wronged you. He says, you go and speak to that individual. This is part of admonishing. There's a reason that Jesus said what he did there. Did you ever notice in church life that if you are the one that has to go and address a situation, it has to be worth addressing? You know what I mean? So, you know, if I'm just running to Pastor Andy with a grievance against you, it can be ever so small. I can still go to him and tell him to take care of that because it bugs me. And I don't think you're spiritual because you're doing thus and thus and so. You see, when I start giving this some thought about, I'm going to come talk to this brother. And there's some serious things going on here. You know, I think about them things. Do I really need to go do this? Is this serious enough for me to go do this? You see how different it looks. If I can just send someone else to do it, no skin off my back, and the problem is dealt with, or more problems are created doing it that way, probably. I will not go. So you don't know me very well, but I hate confrontation. I hate when there's any kind of conflict. I just love when things are always peaceful and cozy. I love that. But when there's humans around, that's not always the case. So having said that, when I hate conflict. So if I have to go and talk to someone about something, believe me, it's worth talking about because I hate doing it. That's the point I'm trying to make. We as individuals must stand up and take responsibility and go to the source. As we do that, there's another thing that I need to remind you of, and that is that you must go in love. You must go in love. In fact, I'm going to go as far as to say that you should not go if you can't go in love. And I don't think that is contradicting what Jesus says. What I'm saying there is just make sure you develop that love before you go. But if you cannot go in love, don't go, because they will know. That brother or sister that you are coming to speak to, they will know how you feel about them. The truth needs to be spoken, but there's different ways to speak the truth. The truth can be spoken very unkindly. I know of situations where that has happened, and that has brought more hurt, even though that individual is saying, all I said was the truth. All the stuff that I told you is true. And yet, the recipient could tell there was no love there. There was judgment. There was no love. It's only when we learn to love like Jesus loved that we are fit to go. And that's a tall order, because Jesus loved. I mean, I wonder how he could love those people that were in the process of destroying his very life. And yet he did. He loved them. He forgave them. I don't know if we humans can measure up to that level of love or not. We need to at least attempt to love like Jesus did. So go in love, go to the source, don't go to everyone else. You know how easy that is. You know, sometimes we go to other people and talk about this situation because, well, we need counsel. We need to get some advice on this. Really, I mean, sometimes that's the case. Sometimes that's the case, but sometimes it's just because we want to air our grievance about someone. So be careful. Be careful. Don't go talking to other people. That only increases attention because I found that those things just have a way of getting back. They have a way of going full circle. You never expected that to come back to this brother or sister, and here it comes. And now you're in more trouble than you were before. Just do it God's way. You'll save yourself a lot of trouble. There's a lot of value in just going directly to that person, because as you do that, and as you go in love, you don't go, or you should not go, in judgment. This is how it is. This is what you did, and this is what you must do. Rather, there's so much value in approaching a situation like that and just asking questions. You know, this is what I heard. Is this even true? This is how it felt to me. Is that how you meant it? Like, help me out here with this. And that can just, that itself can just help to begin to diffuse a very tense situation. Because some offenses are real and some are imagined. You know, there's times when I have imagined things that weren't true, and I believe you have. There's times when I have said and done things that people took something out of it that I didn't mean. You know, it's just a simple conversation. Is this what you meant? And maybe you're absolutely not. I had no intention of conveying that. Well, you know what? The problem's over. We're friends again. There's something about communication that I still don't understand. I think sometimes I communicate completely clearly, and then other people in my life say, I never heard you say that. We go out for breakfast as our ministry team there at Allegheny. We go out for breakfast just to connect and talk about things that need to be talked about. We go out once a month, usually. And we have a retired pastor there now who used to go with us, and he doesn't. Then for a while, he was kind of, sometimes he was there and sometimes he wasn't. So we always went to the same place, and the waitress knew that there was usually four of us. And so there's one morning we sat down for breakfast, and this one brother was not there. He wasn't coming. And so we were sure to tell her. My co-pastor said, she said, the waitress came over to the table. She says, are we waiting on anyone else? He said, no, we're all here. And she walks off. And 10 minutes, 15 minutes, I believe probably 20 minutes went by, and this waitress didn't come back. And finally, we stopped her and said, hey, we're all here. She said, oh, really? I thought you just told me you're waiting on someone. Now, all of us at the table heard that brother say, we are all here. That waitress walked away saying, okay, they're still waiting on someone. How is that even possible? I don't know how that's possible, but I know that those things can happen in church life. And that is why we need to go back and have that frank, candid conversation about what happened. And is what I heard what you actually said? Communication is such a key. We thought we conveyed it clearly, and they heard something completely different, and we don't even know it until there's a problem. And then there's this thing of everybody looks at situations differently and sees things differently. Sometimes you have situations, I don't know if that happens here, sometimes it happens at our church, you know, you have, and other churches. I'm not picking on our church because we're just normal people there trying to serve the Lord. But you know how it is. You have something comes up in a church, and there's a party that thinks this, and there's a party that thinks that. and you begin to try and work with this and bring resolution to this, and this person is sure it was this way, and this person is sure it was this way. In fact, they know it was. And it's so confusing. Who is not telling the truth? Who in this situation is not telling the truth? And we get frustrated. Well, maybe they're all telling the truth. You know, we all look at things from a different perspective. I might see things differently than you do. You might see things differently than I do. Here again, we go back to the communication. Can we talk about it? Can we air it? Can we understand each other? And maybe sometimes we have to just agree to disagree. And we might look at that later if we get to that. Communicate. Communicate and follow Jesus' wise counsel for dealing with issues. The next one I have is forgiving one another. And these are all things that are important. We need to be contributing these things to our church congregation if we want to have vibrant church life. We need to forgive one another. Colossians 3 verse 13 says, forbearing one another and forgiving one another. Again, there's a couple that we could look at in this verse, but we're just going to look at the forgiving. So forbearing one another and forgiving one another. If any man have a quarrel against any, even as Christ forgave you, so also do ye. So what if all the stuff that I just said, what if all that, you try all that and it still breaks down and there's still a bad situation? Can you just forgive? Can we forgive and go on? Jesus was our perfect example. As he was facing death, dying on the cross, suffering more than any of us can imagine, and yet, in that terrible condition, he's saying, Father, forgive them. Forgive these people that are hurting me, they're killing me, that are abusing me. Forgive them. Even though they were doing unspeakable things to him. You know, we are to do the same. We are to do the same. And I don't know about you, but that sometimes goes against my grain. Because if somebody hurts me, somebody really hurts me, they really should pay a little bit for that, just so they know how badly they've hurt me. Can you identify with that? I don't know. Maybe you don't ever struggle with that. We feel like there should be some kind of cost to this, to these people that have hurt us. Jesus said, Father, forgive them, for they know not what they do. Peter came to Jesus with that question. How many times do I need to forgive someone? You know, I think Peter struggled with relationships just like we do. And I believe if I understand how it was back in Peter's day, I think they were required at least by law to forgive three times. So Peter comes to Jesus and he goes more than twice that. He says, Jesus, how about I forgive seven times? I wonder if he didn't even pat himself on the back a little as he was saying that. Seven times, like that's twice as many as we're required to do. Imagine the shock that went across Peter's face when Jesus says, Peter, you don't understand. Why don't you try forgiving 490 times? 70 times 7. I don't think Jesus was saying that he should count them up. Because if we're counting the times we forgave, we're not forgiving. I don't think Jesus meant that at all. I think Jesus was just saying, Peter, you've got to keep forgiving no matter how many times you've got to forgive. You just keep on. We need to practice that sometimes, don't we? Things happen in church life, and sometimes it's the same individual again, and then again, and again. How many times are you willing to forgive that brother? And we get a little awkward with that sometimes. We say, well, can't this brother or this sister ever learn? When are they going to get beyond this thing that they keep struggling with, for their failure that they keep failing in? When are they going to get beyond that? Surely, at their age, they should be able to get beyond that. Why do I have to keep on forgiving them? So Don't they know how hard this is for me? We need to keep forgiving. You know, we get irked when we have to forgive somebody a few times. Consider yourself. Consider yourself and how Jesus looks at you. You know, as Jesus looks at me, he's long past the point of 90, I am sure. He's way beyond that because I am a human and I make mistakes. So if we want God to continue to forgive us, we need to do the same. Matthew 6:15 says, "But if ye forgive not men their trespasses, neither will your Father forgive your trespasses." These aren't my words. These are Jesus' words. And there may be people sitting here tonight that says, "Preacher, you don't know what I've gone through. You have no idea the hurts that I've suffered, maybe as a child by those I've trusted the most, by a brother that was closest to you, whatever it is. There is things that happen in our lives that bring a lot of trauma. They scar us. And you may be one of those that's saying, you don't know what you're talking about. These things are very real to us and they cannot be taken lightly. Maybe we've been hurt in our marriage. We've been hurt by a spouse deeply. And we don't know how we can forgive. There's married couples today. Yes, even within conservative Mennonite churches that are simply existing together. There's hurt. There's pain. How do we forgive? Maybe it's even your church that has wronged you. You've been hurt by the church. Things have happened that were not good, whatever those things were. You know what your situations are. I don't. I've been through some of my own. Whatever the situation is, let me remind you that Jesus says, "My child, if you're not willing to forgive, I'm not going to be able to forgive you." It's that serious. We need to forgive. God requires us to forgive. All right, let's leave that one. Another one I have here comes from Ephesians 4:32. It says, "And be ye kind one to another, tenderhearted, forgiving one another, even as God for Christ's sake hath forgiven you." I'm going to pick out that "be kind." Be ye kind one to another. We live in an increasingly unkind world, if you please. An increasingly hostile world, where it seems like more and more it's just everybody's out for themselves. Common courtesies, or what we used to call common courtesies, aren't so common anymore. Just drive down the highway and accidentally cut somebody off and see what happens. You know, I didn't even know there was a thing like road rage when I was a boy. We never heard about road rage. Well, now we've coined a term for this. This stuff that happens when people get angry at each other and they aren't kind. They don't practice this kindness. Well, that's out in the world. Are we in the church being that kind of kind person? Are you being kind? Are you making a difference? There again, we could bring in that encouragement that I was talking about earlier. Maybe part of the kindness, being kind, making a difference, showing Christ's love to those around you, blessing people. I guess what made me bring out this point was that I was thinking about those verses in Matthew 25. As the sheep and the goats were being divided, separated, and sent to different destinies. Do you remember what the deciding factor was? Well, you do. You do remember what the deciding factor was on whether you were a sheep or a goat. And sometimes we like to think that the things that will determine my destiny are big things. You know, was I an adulterer? Was I a murderer? But that's not what was in focus here. He says to some of them, I was hungry. I was thirsty. I was naked. I was in prison, and you met my needs. You met my needs, and there's a reward for that. And of course, those people, they were being kind, but it was just a lifestyle to them. They came back saying, I don't remember this. When did I do this? Same way with the others who were criticized for not doing these things. They came back saying, hey, wait a minute. I didn't know you were in prison. What? And Jesus says, the fact that you did it to my brothers and my sisters, that's not the exact words, but in my own words, the fact that you did it to my brothers and my sisters decides your eternal destiny. These were little acts of kindness, getting a drink for a thirsty traveler, a thirsty brother, sister. And that can look, you know, that we can make that practical in all kinds of different ways in church life. How that looks to give a brother or a sister a cup of cold water, or how that looks to bring them some clothes or visit them in prison. It's the little things that matter. It really is, in light of that scripture. Big things matter too, but little things matter. How are we doing with this thing of being kind one to another? Bear one another's burdens. That one comes from Galatians 6, verse 2. It says, bear ye one another's burdens, and so fulfill the law of Christ. Again, this is a commandment that we are given by God. Bear ye one another's burdens. This is not just a mere suggestion. We need to come alongside those people who are bearing the burdens. Maybe we're not, but maybe our brother or sister is. And those burdens can be very heavy. And sometimes if those brothers or those sisters are left to bear them themselves, they fall beneath the load. And then we're there to criticize them because they fell. You know, why don't we just get a hold of that burden? Help them with their burden. Bear one another's burdens. Come alongside that hurting, struggling, down and out brother or sister in your congregation. Now, there's another side to that. If you are the one that is hurting and need assistance, you need to let people know that. One of my pet peeves over the years has been when I know that people are struggling. And how are you doing? You know, you meet them at church Sunday morning or you send them a text. How are you doing? I'm good. I'm good. No, if you can't complain about brothers and sisters not coming and assisting you with your burden if you're not willing to admit that you're carrying one. So it goes both ways. We have to be willing to help, but we also have to be willing to acknowledge that we have a burden. And we hate to admit that too often because we're afraid, whatever, people will look down on us or whatever. Don't say everything is fine if it's not fine. Well, bear one another's burdens, and so you will fulfill the law of Christ. Romans 15, Paul says this, we then that are strong ought to bear the infirmities of the weak, and not to please ourselves. Let every one of us please his neighbor for his good to edification, for even Christ pleased not himself, but as it is written, the reproaches of them that reproach thee fell on me. Sometimes we have to deny ourselves to be available. We have to not do the things that we wanted to do, the things that we needed to do, because there's a brother struggling or a sister struggling. we ought to be there to bear the infirmities of the weak. You know, even Jesus didn't please himself. He lent himself to the service of others. To bear one another's burdens, it's not all about me. Church life is not about me. It's about community. Church life is about community. I'm not here to please myself. I'm here to please Christ by helping others. All right, we need to receive one another. That's number 8. Romans 15, verse 7 says, "Wherefore receive ye one another, as Christ also received us to the glory of God." Now, what do I mean? Why am I bringing that one in? And again, you remember we're talking about church life. We need to receive one another. Do we have any prejudice when it comes to anyone in our church family? Or do we receive them all equally? I'm not saying that. I understand there's different levels of relationships in church life, and I connect better with this brother than I do with that one. And I think that's okay. I think that's okay. But do we have a respect of persons? Do we respect or lift one up and put another one down? Or do we receive them as Jesus does, as Jesus received us? It says we are to receive one another as Christ also has received us to the glory of God. James had some crystal clear observations for us to consider. James 2:9 says, "But if ye have respect to persons, ye commit sin and are convinced of the law as transgressors." I'm impressed with Jesus. As I look at his life, Jesus did not play favorites. It seems like Jesus loved everyone unconditionally. Now, he did have harsh words for some of those religious leaders that were harming the work of his church. He had some harsh words for them, but he didn't play favorites. In fact, he drew a lot of criticism from the spiritual community of his day for relating to people that they thought were beneath his dignity, relating to those sinners. That hated tax collector, Zacchaeus, the leper that he went and touched and healed. You know, he wasn't supposed to do that. He was ceremonially unclean because he had touched that leper. Jesus didn't care. His love and compassion was what mattered. That woman with the alabaster box, you know, that was accused of being immoral. Jesus related to those people. He received them all. You know, sometimes we struggle in church life as church life evolved. Again, I've seen this happen in other churches where a church becomes a close-knit community. And then here comes another family. And we know them. And they've got baggage we don't want here. I mean, these things happen. Or maybe it's just at our church. I don't know. Maybe you can't identify with this stuff at all. But people come with baggage that we feel like we don't need here. We got enough of problems already. We would rather we just come in, we're the last one in, and we shut the door behind us. And let's just keep it this way. But no, here come those other people. And then another one comes. Shame on us when we are the ones saying, when the word comes back to that visiting family, that so-and-so said they just ought to go back where they came from and take their baggage with them. God forbid that we would be the person that does that. Am I saying then that every person who comes should be welcomed with open arms and everything is considered good and wonderful? No, that's not what I'm saying. But when somebody comes to you that you think has baggage, well, maybe they see some in you. I don't know. But we all have our quirks and our flat spots. And I can't see my own so well. I can see yours, okay. My own, I can't see quite as well. And so I tend to, that's what I notice. You notice mine, I notice yours. We can get at each other, at each other's throats like that. When those people come that are in need, can we just embrace that? Can we embrace their need and step up to the plate and encourage them and exhort them and minister to them and love them and everything else we've been talking about tonight? What good do you think it will be that to them? If they are struggling, they probably know they are struggling. They don't need to hear us saying those kind of things. And I have heard those kind of things being said already. Are you okay with God using this church congregation right here to stop someone on their flight away from God? To stop someone on their flight away from the church they've been raised in that's similar to yours? God might be bringing them here for a reason. He might see your church as the community that can help those people and can bring out the best in them. Paul said, 1 Corinthians 12, that God has set the members. God has set the members, every one of them, in the body, as it had pleased him. Yes, there's wisdom and discretion that needs to be exercised as people come to your church. I understand that. But God brings the people to us that he wants here. What are you going to do with that? Are you going to receive them and bless them? And maybe they will stay here for a year and walk out the door again. Maybe they will. What have you done with that year? Well, the last one I have is preferring one another. Romans 12:10 says, be kindly affectionate one to another with brotherly love, in honor, preferring one another. And as I said before, church life is not all rosy, as you know. But I wonder how different our church life would be if instead of pointing out everyone else's fault to them and placing the blame where we feel the blame should be placed, what if we would be competing to take the blame for what happened? Do you think that would make church life different? What if something negative happened in your congregation? Everybody's saying, oh, that was my fault. Man, I shouldn't have done that. I obviously the buck stops here. And another brother saying, hey, no, brother, you can't take the credit for that. I get the picture. How would church life look? Rather than saying, I knew that was going to happen. I knew that was going to happen. He did it before. He'll do it again. Are we preferring others above ourselves? What if we were all trying to give the benefit of the doubt instead of trying to place the blame? Or take the credit for what went wrong instead of placing the blame? How would it be if we were all willing to lift others up above ourselves? Now, we've been created in a way that we just like to be, if we're not on the top, at least close to the top. That's just human nature. What if we would be focused on lifting others up? Philippians 2 verse, or 1 verse, no, 2 verse 3 says, let nothing be done through strife or vainglory, but in lowliness of mind, let each esteem other better than themselves. Try putting that to practice over the next year and see what a difference it makes in your church life. There's so much more good can happen when we're not out there competing for the credit for the good things that have happened and placing the blame for the bad things that have happened. All the credit and the glory goes back to God anyways, doesn't it? After all, I am nothing. You are nothing. The glory goes back to God. You are simply, you can't even do anything except God gives you the ability to do it. And so all the glory and the recognition is God. I don't care how well you can teach Sunday school. The glory is God's. Boy, in conclusion, God really cares. God really cares about how we get along with each other. I think the church is just so close to his heart. He just loves the church, and he's coming back again soon for it, and he wants it to be a cohesive, functioning entity that is blessing our communities and each other. So God really cares how we get along with each other. And as I said, I believe I mentioned earlier that I do not think this means that every relationship will be warm and fuzzy and cozy. There's an example in the Bible I'd just like to point out yet. You know the story of Paul and Barnabas? Now, Paul and Barnabas were two great men of God, in my opinion. And they did a lot in the early church. They went around the then known world preaching the gospel and starting churches and tremendous. But you remember what happened when they had that little fiasco with John Mark? And I believe it was Barnabas wanted to take John Mark along on their journey, and Paul says, not having it. You know what happened last time? And it says there was a contention. And what does it say about that contention? Do you remember? It says it was sharp. I don't think this was just a little bit of a, yeah, you know what? It's not my preference, whatever. No, this was a sharp contention. As I said, these were holy men of God. What did they do with that? And I'm not sharing this to say that, yeah, if you can't agree with somebody, just split and go a different direction. Sometimes we need to do that. Paul and Barnabas did that. Paul and Barnabas said, you know what? You go your way. I'm going to go my way. But I believe the scripture is clear. I mean, we can see that they got back together later. They worked together later. There was no animosity, no lasting animosity between them. Sometimes we focus on this love, well, I got to love everybody. You know, there are some people that I'm just not going to mesh with all the time. And I think that's okay. I don't want to undo everything that I've just preached this evening, but I think there are times when God is okay with an approach like Paul and Barnabas took there. But by God's help, this will not be the norm. This will not be the norm. So may the Lord bless you as you commit yourselves again to building this church, to building relationships in this church, and to reaching a higher level of blessing and honoring and preferring and loving one another. I'm not going to give an invitation tonight. I am going to open it up just for a minute or two. If you have anything that you would like to share, maybe I said something that was wrong. Maybe there's something you would like to share. Is there anyone?